Hi, folks. Steve Urban here, host of the Riderflex podcast and founder and CEO of our day job, recruiting firm Riderflex. We hope you enjoy this episode. And as a reminder, please subscribe to the podcast for updates and news. Finally, if you haven't already, check out the series of books we've published on hiring, interviewing, and overall career advice titled The Riderflex Guide, available on Amazon. And now, a quick word from our sponsor.
Most homeowners don't have the time or expertise to properly take care of their home, which causes costly issues to arise. That's where Kura Home Maintenance comes in. We're a full-service, routine maintenance company that was developed by a certified home inspector. Each quarter, we service our clients' homes following manufacturers' recommendations to properly maintain all the necessary appliances. We provide the materials and expertise to prolong the life of your property, creating a healthy and efficient environment for your family. From top to bottom, we'll maintain and service your home. To get started, we have a property inspection to determine what needs to be maintained, and a maintenance plan is created based on your preferences. From refrigerator coils to filters, vents, and drains, we do it all, and we do it well. Contact us today for your free routine maintenance inspection. And never worry about your maintenance again.
Caroline Schleifer on the Riderflex podcast. Hello, Caroline. How are you?
Hello, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I love the... You're obviously from France, I'm just assuming.
Yes, yes. Not. It's difficult to hide with my accent, yeah.
So you grew up there? You went to high school, you went to college, tell us a little bit about your family journey.
Yeah, so I was born in Paris, grew up there, but I left France like 23 years ago, but my accent stayed with me. Even so, I made a lot of effort, it's still with me.
Do they teach English as a second language as you're going through school there, or how does that work?
Yeah, well, they taught us English, but it started with, where is Brian? Brian is in the kitchen, you know, this kind of easy English. So it was, my teacher was French, so the accent was really not the best at that time. And so it took me a while to speak a good English. And actually, it's when I arrived in the US, when I was already like 27 or something, that... I learned English the hard way when I had to work in English. So yeah, it took me some time, and then my kids helped me to improve my vocabulary as they were better, progressing faster than me.
And your children were born in the US?
Not born in the US, but raised in the US, yeah.
I see, okay, gotcha. All right, and Schleifer, is that German, or what is that, Schleifer?
East of France.
Is it, okay. Tell me about your folks, your parents, and any siblings real quick.
Yeah, three siblings. So I'm the eldest one. And my parents were both independent. So my dad is a doctor. And my mom is a pharmacist. So she had a pharmacy, a drugstore, in the equivalent of a drugstore in the US. And so I grew up, in Paris, working, helping my mom, working always in the background, starting to sell products when I was during summertime. And so that's how, I start to like this entrepreneur way of life, I would say.
Are you folks still alive? Still with
us?
Yeah,
lucky enough to have young parents. So yeah, they are still alive, still in Paris.
So they didn't want to move to the US and retire here? No?
No, I think they're Parisian at heart, and outside of Paris is difficult for them.
And how about your siblings?
My siblings, actually, I have a brother, a younger brother. He lives in Paris, but my sister is like me. She travels around the world. She lived in South America. Now she lives in Vietnam, actually. So yeah, very also adventurous.
Okay. And what do your mom and dad think of Americans? What is their general thought of the U.S.? If you just ask them, like, hey, what do you think of Americans? What would your dad say? I'm just curious. Or your mom, either one.
So, you know, when I grew up, my dad was a big fan of the US, US music. I mean, I think he knows he collected all the vinyls at that time of
Okay.
jazz and US singers. It was also the time where the US, you know, was very, very prominent in France, and all the innovation, etc., was coming from the US. And I clearly remember when I was 18, my first trip to the US. It was impressive, you know, the big cars, the big streets, etc. So that was my first memory, and we were lucky to do this trip as a big family, and that was really a very nice moment.
Okay. Very good. So he has nothing negative to say then. He doesn't think we're just a bunch of wild cowboys or anything.
No, actually, they loved, you know, it was at that time, it was when Dallas was, you know, the soap opera was popular in France. So I grew up with my grandparents watching Dallas. And actually, I
That's
ended
fun.
up living in Dallas for 2 years. So my parents came to visit, and we went to the South Fork French. So South Fork French.
That's
So it
pretty.
was really funny.
That's pretty cool. How did you? And I'll see. Were you married with children before? What? Yeah, tell me about that.
Yeah, so I met my husband at university, actually. So we were married since quite some years. And my husband was also from about the same background, with parents also in the pharmacy space.
Oh, interesting.
And he wanted to travel the world. He's passionate about health and science and discoveries. So we ended up, you know, traveling. Starting, he started a company, and we traveled the world with this. So it was, yeah, great adventure. So he's my partner and my husband.
Is he part of your business now? Is he part of Reg Ask or no?
He's not, but advising, of course, quite
Okay.
often.
And your kids, are they teenagers? Are they grown? Are they little?
Well, my kids, I have a spread, I would say. That's been 25 years that I'm parenting. So my eldest one is working on her own in actually in Canada. And my second one is studying. And my third one is a younger one is with us, still living with us, and preparing his, you know, his diploma in 2 years. So still quite young.
I see. And you live, is New York your base?
We're spread between the US and Asia, so we're in between both, yeah.
And is that because of his business or yours or both?
Both, both, yeah.
How does your son go to school? How does he handle the schooling if you're back and forth?
No, so my son is based in Asia.
I see. Interesting. Okay. Wow. All right. Is he learning the language as well?
Yeah, well, of course, he's, I mean, he's perfectly, he speaks perfect English, but French as well, and Spanish. So, yeah,
Okay, I see. Okay.
he has to learn, yeah.
Very good. Well, thank you. Oh, sounds like a wonderful family. Sounds like you had a good childhood and you have a great family now. You don't have any scars or horrible stories to share. You weren't ever
Oh,
arrested
you
or
know,
you didn't
I
ever
think
you don't
every family has their own challenges, I would say. And so, of course, we all have our own scars. But I can say that, yeah, we've been, you know, good bonds, and
Yeah.
trying to stay up. Yeah.
And were you always a straight A student? Were you always a good kid, or were you a rebel? What kind of young adult were you?
I think if you ask any parent, they will always say that the teenager is not the best time. So I was probably a bit of rebel, and maybe not what my parents expect, but I guess that's normal, and that's the way of life, you know. But well, now it's yeah, it's all back on track.
Any of your three? Do you have a rebel with one of your three, or no? Or are they all?
Yeah, there's always a part of rebel in each of the kids, but I think we need to cherish that as well. It's how you build yourself.
Yes, I completely agree. I completely agree. So, when you were at university, did you know that you wanted to be an entrepreneur? What was your plan at first?
I think I've always known that I would not work in a big corporate because I've learned that I enjoyed the contact of clients at the pharmacy. I enjoyed having kind of your own drive and kind of owning your destiny in a way. So that was always a drive for me. So in which form, which company, which that was not very clear. But yeah, being an entrepreneur was always something that I was looking for.
And what was your first entrepreneurial journey? Was that with you and your husband doing something together? What was the first adventure?
No, actually, I started working at a pharmacy, at a drugstore in Paris at the very beginning, just after graduating. And it was kind of by accident. I had to manage this drugstore. It was one of the biggest in Paris. And I had done my internship for several months in this pharmacy. And then they were looking for a replacement. And so I was there and I knew all the team. And so I started to work for more than a year in this pharmacy, managing a team of 20 persons. It was at this time a big pharmacy with a huge turnover. So I had to do everything from managing the team, being also serving the clients, making the orders, managing the cash flow, etc. So it was really interesting, bringing a lot of challenges, of course, because I was learning as I was doing. But that was a really nice experience, and that taught me that even if you don't know everything, you can learn on the spot, and especially if you're surrounded by a great team, and you can really overcome the challenges.
You were a young manager. Were you late 20s right there, early 30s?
What, about how old were you? I was around 26, 25, 26,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Did you have your doctorate, or were you still going to school at that time?
Yeah, no, I just had my doctorate, yeah.
I see. Okay. Wow. Brand new manager. You had your doctorate, so you were super smart, but your experience leading people was still limited. So you learned a lot as you went along, I'm sure.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay, then what happened? Did you get bored passing out pills and filling pill bottles, and you're like, okay, I don't want to do this? What happened?
Yeah, exactly. Well, at some point, I say, okay, let's explore something else. Even so, I really enjoyed being, with customers, with the team, etc. I said, let's explore, and especially because we always wanted to travel. I thought probably working in a different environment would help us. So I started working in a consulting firm. In the life science industry, which also had some challenges and some learning phase. And that was really a nice experience working with a diverse portfolio of clients, helping them in different aspects of their journey. And I learned a lot from this experience.
And what was your primary function as a consultant? What was your specialty? Was it R&D? Was it technology, finance, marketing, sales? What was your what was your secret sauce?
So I made a lot along the way, but I started first on some market research and then on scouting innovation, and that was really my passion. So scouting either new technologies, new ingredients, etc. So that was for a consulting firm around life science and nutrition. So it was also scouting, for example, for experts. Dealing with experts and organizing some conferences, etc. So I had I worked on many different aspects of the consulting, and that was really a great learning phase.
And was the target client for the consulting firm, was it small companies, medium, large? What kind of companies did they target?
It was a good mix. I started not with the biggest one, of course. I started with mid-sized companies, but then I quickly moved to the bigger names, the multinational clients. I had a diverse portfolio of clients, so it was really interesting to see the different needs and the different way of working from small clients to large companies.
I'm gonna guess that as you met founders and board members and owners and entrepreneurs, and you worked with them more and more, that your desire grew to want to be one of those people instead of just helping one of those people. Is that accurate?
Yeah, exactly, and especially when you see great ideas, or you have some ideas to help and transform something, and when you're a consultant, of course, you don't make a big impact, and sometimes the idea just go on the drawer and never see the light. So actually, at some point, I thought, okay, now it's time to jump into the water and really do something more tangible. Yeah.
And when you got ready to make the jump, walk us through how Reg Ask was developed, because I think I read or I saw, because I did a little homework on you, of course, and I think, didn't you have partners from the consulting firm? Were there some people from your consulting firm that you did Red, you combined efforts to start Reg Ask? Is that what happened?
Yeah, so actually, Reg Ask, during my consulting time, at some point, I was the head of regulatory and scientific affairs.
Okay.
And so that's also where, I learned a lot on that space, on the clients. And then it became a kind of a spin-off of this consulting practice, I would say. But it was at a different consulting firm. I had changed in between.
Oh, I see. I see. Okay. I only see one on your LinkedIn profile, so I didn't know for sure.
I'm not super good at my LinkedIn profile.
It's okay.
That's something I have to work on.
It is Reg, R-E-G, ask, regask.com is the website. Will you give us the elevator pitch for Reg Ask for everybody? Just tell us a little bit about Reg Ask. Go for it.
Yeah, sure. So Reg Ask, we are, AI-driven regulatory intelligence platform. So we help companies to basically identify the latest changes, regulatory changes, and also identify potential risk and opportunities. So we have this. We enable the end-to-end regulatory workflow orchestration from automating regulatory intelligence, but also helping on smart documentation and embedding a connected community of experts. So we help streamline basically the regulatory execution. So throughout the product lifecycle, we help companies to identify the risk and increase efficiency in the regulatory affair process.
And so it's a consulting firm, it's a service business, or is it a SaaS business as well?
It's a SaaS business with a service component, I would say.
I see. Okay. So it's an ongoing software as a service. There's a platform or whatever that you sign up for. Yeah, talk to me about the platform. Yep.
Yeah. So there is a platform that you sign on. You get regulatory alerts based on your scope. So the advantage for our clients is that the scope is very curated based on their needs, based on their their industry, the scope that they are monitoring.
I see.
And
okay.
then based on that, we leverage the data as well to identify some trends and give them some analytics. After that, there's always a question of, okay, you have this information, but what do you do with that? How does this impact your product? How does this impact your workflow? So it's always the challenge between identifying what can impact you, what is coming in terms of change, and then how do you implement this change in your organization. And so sometimes after that, you have the need, because the impact can be important, you have the need sometimes to have a deeper support from a regulatory expert. And that's where we have this community of experts to help also provide further insights, further guidance on the impact for our clients. And progressively, we are integrating AI, so the clients can ask questions on the natural language way, like what's applicable for me, how is this regulated, etc. And we also use AI to leverage additional value from the data that we have on providing feedback loops on the comments that are generated by our community of experts.
Is there a one-time like a one-time evaluation setup discovery fee? Like we come in, let me find out what's going on. You charge one upfront fee and then an ongoing monthly service. And then maybe some consulting service fees in addition to that, if you want tactical implementation, or what's the model?
Yeah, we have two models. I would say the first one, the most prominent, is that client come to us and say, "Oh, I'm overwhelmed by the number of regulations that we have to monitor. We don't know what's relevant to us, and we want to have to streamline this process." So it's a subscription, a yearly subscription. We take their scope, we identify what's, you know, we kind of do the setup of the monitoring, and then they pay along the subscription. Then sometimes we have clients who will say, "Okay, I want to enter a new market. I want to know all the regulations that are currently applicable to my product."
I see.
But then after, I want, of course, to monitor and to see what's happening, etc. Mm. So in that case, you have a one-off fee for the additional setup and the additional content, and then the subscription along the way.
And what if I don't have the manpower to implement everything you tell me that's wrong? Can you send consultants to my firm and take care of it for me?
Yeah, so we won't send people to your firm, but we will definitely provide the support needed. So through our net community of experts, we help the things to be implemented. So if it's for a dossier submission, for adjusting some claim compliance, or for understanding, you know, the consequences, etc. So we'll have the necessary team to help figuring out that for you. And we work through, you know, communication through the platform, etc. And that's done very seamlessly. And the beauty of that is that everything that all the data that are collected for you are shareable among your largest team. So, you know, you don't lose information, because very often what we've seen with our client is that they were sending emails, and then they had SharePoint, and then they had Excels and newsletters, etc. All the data were scattered.
Yes.
And when someone was leaving, it was like, "Oh, we lost all the data because we don't know where they are," you know. So here, the idea is really to collect everything, to organize everything in one space, and to have people who can collaborate with the content that is constantly augmented.
I'm guessing you have a mix of W-2 employees, and then you have partner consultants that you can call upon. I'm guessing it's a mix.
Yeah, it's a mix. And also we are global. So we serve not only the US, but we serve over 100 countries. So we have local experts in most of I would say, the major countries that we serve. And so we have different ways of organization, or at least of contracting.
Okay. And how many how many team members? Can you tell me how big the organization is?
Yeah, so today we are about 38 team members, between 35 to 40. And but in terms of community of experts, we have more than 500 experts globally, spread globally, depending also on their, you know, these are subject matter experts. So they are very specialized in the different areas that we serve.
I see. And your base, where's the company located? Where's the home office, so to speak?
I would say there's no home office, or there is many home office probably, because the company, you know, we started just before COVID. So COVID hit, that's where we started our recruitment. Mm. So we were kind of agnostic about where we were doing the recruitment. And we have a very flexible policy in terms of work. You know, people can work remote. So we have one office in New York, one in Europe, and one in Singapore for Asia. And so but the team is really spread around multiple. I think we had 14 different countries where the team was spread at some point, and then our experts are really spread in more than 100 countries.
How many founders were there? Were you the sole founder, or what was the makeup in the beginning?
Yeah, I was a sole founder, but I had the chance to have some good friends or colleagues that were giving me good advice as well. But I was the sole founder. Yeah, so we've gone through from pre-seed, seed round, and then Series A about a year ago.
Okay.
So I have lead investors, and I'm not anymore at all alone in the cap table. But that's great because then I have a lot of support as well from our investors.
Can you tell me what your Series A was? What was the amount, or can you share?
Yeah, sure. No, it's public. It's we got 10 millions in the Series A.
Okay, and raising cash, let's talk about it for a minute, because people always, you know, this is one of the biggest challenges for entrepreneurs. Are you glad you raised when you did? Do you wish you had raised more? Do you wish you'd raised sooner? Just take a couple of minutes and give your advice to anybody listening about raising cash, what you learned, and maybe some tips you want to share.
Yeah, I raised at different point of the company. So the first time was really on pre-seed. It was kind of friends and families, I would say. So that's where you want to, you understand you have kind of a proof of concept and you want to grow the company, but you're still quite small and your needs are quite small. And then I was lucky to have, you know, kind of an initial product market fit. So some clients, you know, who joined us very early on the journey and helped us also to shape the product. And then as you progress, you know, you want to hire more team, you want to develop faster, you have some more ideas to develop a better product. And so that's where we started to raise the seed round, extended a bit more than friends and family and extended a bit. And then we thought, okay, there's a good traction, so it's time for a Series A.
Can I pause you right there? Can I pause you right there? Did you have the recurring revenue from the SaaS model built before you tried to raise the Series A?
Yeah, so we had some initial recurring revenue
okay.
that were showing you know that the model was right. But we had at that point we needed, you know, to really push more on the product and to push more on the sales.
Okay.
So it was really with a very specific focus on developing further the sales and pushing more on the product. So
okay, very good.
That were our two main objectives. And at that time we you know the market conditions were different from today. So we raised at a point where we had an interesting, I would say, interesting growth and some good growth target as well. So the Series A helped us really to kind of accelerate this growth, I would
Oh,
say.
for
And
sure. Yeah.
Yeah,
that was a big
bringing,
deal.
People, you know, who can really support you, advise you, and really help be with you to accompany you during this journey. So it's really different. You're really shifting, I would say, and learning new skills as you progress and as you raise different rounds. So now we're on at the growth acceleration stage. And it's again different. And what strikes me every time is that every time you have a different round and you pass a certain milestone, I would say, you have to learn new skills. You have what brought you there is not what will bring you to the next stage, really. And so that's really the challenge. But you have also not the same amenities with you, so it's also a different game. So it's a constant learning as well, but it's a very interesting journey.
Interesting journey, not just for the company, but for you, right? The CEO, where you were operating, doing lots of tactical, probably in the beginning, and then you're shifting into dealing with captive equity holders and raising cash, and you're being pulled into different avenues of being CEO, right? It's had changed, big changes for you.
Exactly. Yeah. No, big change. And you need to adapt constantly. So for me, it was really, you know, being able to make this change, being able to zoom in and zoom out, because you still need to be close to your business, close to your customers, etc. But you cannot stay all the time on the tactic and on the team. So you need to have this ability to be there when you need to learn something and to stay attuned with your the business. But at the same time, you need to think about the strategy, the long term, you know, the vision, etc. And also address the needs from a board, from investors, etc.
Are you, so you're officially a growth company that's going to move towards an exit and or an IPO, one of the two. Do you have a plan? Do you want to talk about what the plan is? What can you share?
So we're not officially yet in that stage, but okay. Definitely moving towards that stage. So there's not much that I can share today. Okay. But yeah, that's let's say we're on towards this path.
Okay, very good. That'll be well. Hey, you're headed in the right direction. I'm assuming your cash flow pot. You're not in a burn state right now, because now that your software is built, are you still burning cash or are you profitable?
So we're still burning cash because we are, you know, still building, improving the product, I would say.
Okay.
But we are close to be profitable. And our objective, of course, is to reach that stage as soon as possible.
Okay, very good. One more question on the cash raise, and then we can move to something else. Did you take from PE, VC, did both? Was it angel? Was it, yeah, on the 10 million, was it?
Yeah. It was a VC, yeah.
VC, okay, all right. Well, your life definitely got a little bit different when you took the year.
Yeah, indeed.
Okay, very good.
But they came also with a great, you know, great background in the industry. So
good.
That's
good, 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 good.
Yeah, that's helping as well.
Let's talk about, by the way, the software. I guess the software that you've made now, the proprietary software, I guess, is. That's your IP, right? That's your a big part of your valuation at this point.
Yeah, so our IP is part of the software and part of the content, or the way that we use the content in the software. So okay. We have a meet.
Okay. Let's talk about the regulatory stuff around AI. I mean, what a fascinating time we're living in right now, Caroline, isn't it? Is it just mind blowing the stuff that's
Indeed.
Going on right now?
Yeah, I would have never thought that I would have lived through this transformation, and so quickly on top of that.
I completely agree. I guess my first question is, how the hell do you even keep up with it? I mean, it's moving at such light speed. You're trying to keep up with the rules and regulations, and meanwhile, every week something else is coming out, and there's it's like, wow, I don't even know how you even stay up with it.
Yeah, well, that's also, you know, that's what our clients are facing. So that's,
yes.
For us, it's also a very interesting time because we're using AI and it's moving super, super fast. And I'm very lucky to be surrounded with a team that is really well-versed in that space. So from our CPTO, our AI advisor, etc., they are really, really... super, super knowledgeable in that space. And at the same time, you know, our clients are living also all these changes in the regulations and this interpretation, etc. And we are, our tool is perfect to help them to monitor that. So that's, I would say that's the two aspects that we are really living full speed in our company.
Do you have a bunch of lawyers that also you partner with, or
some
no?
Lawyers we partner with, but our main aspect is really on regulations.
Okay. Do you have? I guess you have contacts inside different governments and different countries to see what they're passing, what laws. Do you have lobbyists that stay up with this? How do you get the information? How do you stay up with the information?
I mean, a lot of information, you know, are publicly available, but the challenge is how you get this information on time and how you organize this information and then how you distribute this information.
Yeah.
So surprisingly, you know, it's not so much on how to get that information, but it's more how you will pass it, how you will digest this information, because it's quite often it's written in a way that is not always easy to understand. It can be in multiple language. It's sometimes it's not published on internet because some countries don't have yet all this. So there's many different hurdles. And then even if it's publicly available, you know, the job in a company of regulatory team is not always to stay and monitor constantly the website or the information to know what's happening. So they receive a ton of information, and the time to read and to filter, you know, it's huge. So we've done a test a few months back to see on a specific topic, you know, how much time, what was the volume of the content that you were supposed to read if you wanted to spot what matters for a specific company. And it ended up that it was, I think it was 19,000 pages of regulation just to spot like five or six alerts of something that were relevant really for them. And so imagine the time to spend or the number of people to hire if you want really to go through these 19,000 pages. And knowing that you have to find where these 19,000 pages are located, and they are located in many different sources, in different languages, etc. So it's the amount of work to do is massive. And we talk from small to very large companies, and the struggle is the same. How do you keep up with this level of information? And I think it's the same in every business. You know, even if it's not regulations, you probably receive tons of information that could be relevant, but just the time you spend to skim through what can be relevant and the time to read that, to digest and to make this something actionable for you, it's a lot of time. So that's where we spend, that's where the technology can help actually.
Yes. Can a small business afford your services? Like for example, RyderFlex, our day job at RyderFlex, we're a recruiting and staffing firm. So as a search firm, we're a $3 million business. Can a $3 million business afford Reg Ask? I mean, or is it only for medium to large companies?
No. We have startup companies who can afford our service. We have a startup package. And no, definitely we welcome all sides of companies.
Okay. I want to talk about AI. I want to take it up to 30,000 feet for a minute, a little bit. You know, I hear Elon and other power players saying, hey, we should be cautious. Hey, there probably should be some more regulation. Hey, we need to maybe slow down. Like, we need to be careful. This could get out of hand, blah, blah, blah. I hear that. Did I lose you, Caroline?
No, I'm there.
Okay. So I hear some people saying, hey, this is moving at light speed, like we need to be careful. Do you feel the same? Do you think there needs to be more government regulation throughout the countries? Or do you think it should just be free enterprise, you know, best person wins? What are your thoughts from 30, 50,000 feet a little bit about all of it?
Yeah, well, I would just give some opinion, but I think there's a lot of people who are very well versed and will be better placed than me to give an opinion. But regulations, you know, at the end of the day, it's really to help make better usage of the technology. So I think the regulation shouldn't prevent innovation, but should also help to kind of protect in a way the different players and allow for a diversity of players and also to allow some understanding for the for the overall population, you know, where do we want to put our effort, how should we use the best this technology. So I think a balanced approach on probably observing, letting a bit of innovation going, and then if there's a need, quickly putting some regulations in place, or at least some having an observation of what's happening, is probably something that is smart to do. And a lot of countries today, the US are taking some steps towards observing and acting whenever it's needed to protect both the innovation but also the human after that. I think Europe is taking a stake that is maybe a bit too restrictive for the innovation. So probably a balance in between is nice. And at the end of the day, it's always interesting to have, you know, different point of view and to have the one that are really using or and inventing these technologies that understand them well, to listen to them and to see what can be done, what would be the best. And there is no right or wrong answer. I think it's a trial and error, and mostly, you know, observing and progressively putting in place some structure.
Did you see where Sam Altman is going to try to raise $1 trillion? Did you see that?
Impressive. Yeah. Yeah. That's incredible.
I don't even know how to respond to that. I saw that in the news and I thought, wow. Okay. Do you think, I'm going to ask you another big picture question. Appreciate your answer on the last one. Thank you for sharing. Where are we headed, Caroline? Are robots and AI, are we all just going to go on hikes and do our hobbies and robots are going to control everything? Like, where is all this headed, Caroline? What do you think?
You know, we were looking that on our sector, you know, for regulatory affairs. So it's how do you today? There is a lot of repetitive tasks, manual tasks that take a lot of time and that are not really value added. So it's how we move, you know, from something that is completely manual towards something that potentially can be fully automated. And I don't think the truth is on the fully automated. I think you still need to have the human touch, some human interpretation, etc. But there is definitely a real path forward for the use of technology in semi-automation, possibly. And we won't go to a full autonomous way, but helping along the way with some automation for repetitive tasks and for things that can help us to get more time on more value-added, critical thinking, etc., is definitely something that that we're moving forward, I think.
Do you agree with some of the articles that say up to 40% of the workforce could be affected across the planet? Do you think that's an accurate?
It can be accurate, but it's a way of saying, you know, there will be some people will be affected, but that doesn't mean we won't need these people in different ways. You know? So it's more a shift towards different type of jobs. It will be different needs. But that's the same when we saw, you know, the innovation of the cars. You know, people were before doing things differently. I think here we will see a shift in the, and we will probably need to rethink some jobs differently, maybe upskill or reskill some people. But I don't think that means 40% of the population will be with no job. It's not the case. We've always seen that with innovation, there are some new needs that arise that are bringing new type of jobs, new type of skills. And I'm pretty sure this will be the same case. I don't know what's your opinion. You see a lot of people as well in the industry.
Yes. I appreciate your answer. I think long term, I think your outlook is correct. I think we will get to a transition point where there's not 40% unemployment. My worry is that short term, it's going to be messy. I think it's going to be messy as we get through the growing pains and the shift. That shift is to get these people retrained or to figure out these new jobs. I think there's going to be short term pain. I think is what I see, and maybe long term we're okay. But I'm not an expert. But I think there's going to be some short term pain because it's just moving so fast. And of course, people always use the car analogy or, you know, from kerosene to electricity and different things. I think this is more of a gigantic seismic shift of things than anything the planet has ever seen before. And so I worry that there's going to be some short-term pain. I also worry that I worry that the regulation piece is going to be controlled by a few gigantic companies that will suffocate any innovation or creativity from smaller players, which you touched on a little bit. That makes me nervous. It all makes me nervous, but hey, listen, I'm in Colorado.
I'm optimistic, you know, so that's always my bias. And I guess when you're an entrepreneur, that's something you need.
Yeah. But here's the positive news. We can finish that whole speech with this. I live in Colorado and I love to play in the mountains and go into nature and do my hobbies. And so, hey, if robots are running everything and that gives me more time to do that, that's totally fine with me.
Exactly. Let's see the positive way.
But I, you know, obviously I can see a huge need for Reg Ask. I mean, perfect timing. I mean, they say, you know, there's so many things about a startup that, and they rank the different things, right? The people or the product or the cash flow. But for you, the timing of what you're doing with this regulation stuff with AI, I mean, you're catching the wave. I mean, you are catching the wave right here. This is awesome time for you. I see you guys doing this. I think you'll do this.
You know, that's true that, you know, we have this perfect conjunction between the need, the technology that is helping us also to achieve the vision, and the people, you know, so it's true that it's very often, you know, it's a case of the momentum and the alignment of the planet, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. Good for you. I'm happy for you. Congratulations on everything that you have built. Really great job. Congratulations.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank Caroline, you. Thank you for being on the show. It's RegAsk, RegAsk, RegAsk.com for everybody that wants to look them up that might need their services. Thank you, Caroline. Appreciate you.
Thank you very much, Steve, for having me. Very much enjoyed the conversation.